Welcome to Catalyze, the Connected Leaders Academy virtual conference designed to reshape your vision of transformation. As we navigate the evolving business landscape, our speakers will unveil innovative strategies to manage and initiate change. Prepare to adapt, innovate, and lead, ensuring your role as a catalyst in this transformative era.
2024, we did a study that found that 95% of people are looking for a new job. If they're not actively looking for a new job, they're about to start looking for a new job. On top of that, 58% of folks have already begun to quiet quit, which means they show up in their job and they're not doing their job. They're doing just enough to not get fired. That's terrifying. That's terrifying if you're a business owner, because it means that you're probably the only one in your company that wants to be there. It's also terrifying because it means that you're going to have to start paying people a whole lot more. The people that are going to leave, you're going to have a 20% increase to hire someone new, not to mention the cost of finding new people. But not only is it terrifying, it's tragic. For most of us here that are leaders or business owners ourselves, that means that half of our people are spending half their waking hours at work. They're not fulfilled and they feel like they don't fit in. Why is that? Well, we could blame the economy, we could blame politics, we could blame generational issues. Whatever that we blame, it's a clash of cultures. What's happening is we've fractured ourselves into multiple groups of people, and we're all vilifying each other, trying to pretend that the problem lives outside of us. But really what that means is we have a crisis of leadership. And that crisis has economic consequences as well as emotional ones. Now, the title of this session is How to 10X Your Influence Without Even Being in the Room. But an alternative title, and the one I almost went with, is Creating Camelot, the Holy Grail of Leadership. It's something that I achieved when I was in corporate America. It's something I've taught other people to do, and it's something that I'm going to teach you to do here today. And I hope that you apply these principles and have the success that we all deserve. Because no one deserves to live in a workplace or a culture where they don't know four things. Where are we going? How are we going to get there? Most importantly, where do I fit? And how am I supposed to behave when I'm there? When we as leaders don't answer those four questions, we get the 95% problem that we're staring at. Now, my first boss, his name was John Spirek. He did trim carpentry during the summers with me. He said to me something that stuck with me for all these years. Customers never leave you. You lose them. And as a leader, our customers are our followers and our employees. And this resonates with what a good HR professional will tell you, that baseline financial, like you have to get to a certain baseline financial. And after that number, employees stay or they leave, not based on money, but based on relationships and mission. It's never money. And whose fault is that? I want you to raise your hand with me and say, I'm a leader. It's my fault. Once you start taking that ownership, and that's if you're at the bottom rung of an organization or the top rung of the organization, that's if you're in the profit sector or the nonprofit sector, then you start to be able to find a way out of the hole that we found ourselves in. Hold on a second there, you might say. Culture is not my job. I'm just here to manage people, deliverables, timetables, set goals, set objectives, do measurements, do discipline, blah, 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 and all the things that we do as leaders. But if you're doing all those things, all the knobs that affect culture, who else is setting your culture? Can you imagine a senior vice president or CEO going to the board at Tesla and saying, well, I mean, it's not really my job to give you profit. It's super complicated. Well, I'm going to here to tell you that as a leader, this is your job. In fact, I think it's your only job. So take out a piece of paper and write down, leadership is culture. Culture is my job. So traditional view of leadership says that leadership is strategy, people, and execution. So write that down. Leadership is strategy, people, and execution. But then mark through people and execution and write culture. Because culture is people and execution. So now we're left with the idea that leadership is just strategy and culture. But Peter Drucker tells us, culture eats strategy for breakfast. What does that mean? Well, the Ritz-Carlton, one of the most luxurious hotel brands in the world, frequented by the rich and famous, the elite of the world. They start with this idea. Can you imagine them trying to run that with a convenience store clerk? They start with this idea when they train people. They say, we are ladies and gentlemen, serving ladies and gentlemen. And I love that. In fact, of all the cultural scripts that I've heard in my lifetime, that's probably my favorite. You're taking people at a minimum wage level, people that could be working at a convenience store, and you're telling them you're changing their identity. When you work here at the Ritz-Carlton, money's one thing, but you, I'm asking you to make an identity shift so that you can meet our culture. We are ladies and gentlemen serving ladies and gentlemen. And that's what Peter Drucker meant when he said culture eats strategy for breakfast. Culture is your strategy. And the Ritz-Carlton understands that. Hold on though. If culture is so important, why is it we don't talk about it so much? Why is it this ethereal thing that's not touched on? Well, there's probably a lot of reasons for that, but the number one reason is that it's uncomfortable, because managing culture is fundamentally shaping a person's identity. When you invite people to come work at your office or follow you in whatever endeavor you're leading, you have to possess the thing that I call the audacity of leadership, which is the intentionality to shape the identity of those that are following you. If you want to have 10x your influence, and that's why you're here, you can't do it following from the front, which is what I see most leaders doing today. They pull the audience and ask them if they're doing a good job. Now, you can't find 10x the influence in any modern management theory book. To find it, you're going to have to look at a much older book, but more on that in a second. Let's finish talking about that 95%. The traditional response to bad morale is, well, you just can't find good help these days, or we need a more diverse workforce, or kids these days. I was literally in a conversation a week and a half ago, and they said, we need to hire somebody, but I refuse to hire anybody below 30 because you just can't trust those people. Or my personal favorite, and by favorite, I mean the frustrated favorite, is you got to get the right people in the right seats on the bus. And the reason that one frustrates me so much is that it's almost true. In fact, all of these statements are almost true. And they come from this. The reason it's frustrating is because they offer hope without a solution. They walk right up to the edge of the thing that would be useful, and then they stop short. The phrase, get the right people in the right seats, comes from Jim Collins' book, Good to Great. And that's why some companies make the leap and others don't. Why some companies fail and some thrive. One of his core tenets is that everybody needs to be pushing together on the flywheel, what John Maxwell calls Big Mo. You have to have momentum in your organization if you want to achieve anything. And that means everybody needs to be in a common culture on common goals, pushing in the same direction. And Jim Collins gives us a secret on how to accomplish that. We have to get the right people on the bus, get the wrong people off the bus, and then get the right people on the seats. Right people on, wrong people off, and then the right people in the right seats. Now, when I was younger, I thought, oh, that's cool. There's some bad people in the world and there's good people in the world. We need to get rid of the bad people and find the good people. But what I've discovered as I've grown is that no, some people just don't fit on this bus, and that's okay. It doesn't mean that they're bad or that you're bad. It means that they don't fit the culture. So I think if Jim Collins could have expounded upon that, he might have said something about you need to label the bus. So I just traveled to LAX to the international airport recently. And after I got off the plane and got my luggage, I found myself at the departure station, tired and worn out, ready to go to the hotel. All these buses started coming up. Some buses were for hotels. Some were for the rental cars. Others were for rideshare. Others were limos. Others, I didn't know where they were going. Can you imagine walking onto a bus that had no label? We're a great place to work, the bus says. You'll like our culture here. We espouse excellence. Yeah, but where are you going? When people get on a bus that's not properly labeled, they get really anxious. And I think that 95% of us would want off that bus. So if you have folks that are following you or in your organization that seem to be disgruntled, maybe it's because you as a leader need to do a better job labeling your bus. Get the right people on the bus and the wrong people off the bus so that we can go where you need to go and answer those four questions. Where are we going? How are we going to get there? Where do I fit, and how do we behave on this bus? So how do you set culture? How do you give an identity nudge? How do you say this is a bus that you're on, and this is how we behave here? Well, we could start with a bunch of management theory books, or we can look at people that have already done this really well. People that have had 10 times the influence of their peers, and that influence has lasted not only down the hall into the next conference room, but across generations. Across millennia. I'm talking about religion. So you have the great cultural figureheads, Jesus, Buddha, Muhammad, Gandhi. And of course, we have the SPA, which is Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle. These are all people that have shaped our cultures today. Love them or hate them, they're still shaping the way that we interact with the world. The nice thing to know, though, is that it's not a mystery. There is a department in your organization that actually understands what I'm talking about already, and that's the sales department. Let me leave antiquity and come back up to present day. In 2011, I found myself as part of that 95% looking for a new career. And I found myself in the conference room of Northwestern Mutual interviewing for a job. "Craig, that's all fine and good," I said, "but how do I sell? I've never sold anything before." "Oh, that's simple," he said. "Come over to the whiteboard. We have 40 scripts." "What's a script?" I said. He goes, "Let me show you." So for the next 5 minutes, he proceeded to explain to me why I needed to cash out my 401k and buy an annuity with him, because that would be the financially prudent thing to do. Now, I'm not saying it was the financially right or wrong thing to do, but what I am saying is that I went in there to interview for a job and almost bought a product. That's how powerful scripts are. What if we as leaders, instead of leaving it to chance, instead of asking and hoping our culture will be okay, what if we developed cultural scripts, not sales scripts, cultural scripts, to shape the culture that is ideal for our environment? So how do we do that? Well, if you are a sales guy, I would say you need to rock and roll. That means you need to take large boulders, core ideas, which I call rocks, and then you need to put them around the conversational space. For instance, if you're a real estate agent, we're going to be talking about that 6% commission. And you need to decide, are you going to compromise on that, or are you going to come up with a sales script that holds that 6% sacrosanct? Once you have those rocks in place, you need to practice rolling from one rock to the other so that no matter where you find yourself, whatever trigger you find yourself in that conversation, you're ready with two or three avenues to move to succeed. Starbucks does this. One of the most common problems for Starbucks is irate, unreasonable customers that abuse their entry-level employees. But yet the employees love working at Starbucks. How is it that you can take somebody fussing about their soy latte and still have a positive atmosphere? Well, they tell their people, your apron is your shield. Once you put the apron on, nothing can touch you. If those people are being gross and disgusting, that's them. And they're just throwing that filth onto your apron. Take the apron off at the end of your shift, go home and know you did a great job today. The employees love this because Starbucks has given them a way to manage that tricky situation. And that way of managing situations carries with them even beyond them. Now their identity has been subtly nudged to understand that other people's rudeness is not a reflection of my performance. Okay, so you're bought in. You're ready to start making some scripts. How do we do that? Well, the secret actually comes from comedy. Have you ever watched a comedian walk on stage and he tells you a funny story about driving from the airport there? And at the end of it, a pineapple truck gets hit and he says, "Well, at least it wasn't pineapples." Not that funny. But then later in the set, he'll say another joke and say, "Well, at least it wasn't pineapples," and the crowd erupts with laughter. What's going on there? Well, the science of humor says that it's humor or funniness is inversely proportional to the time it takes to tell a joke. What that means is it ain't funny if it ain't short. So professional comedians know this, and they need to seed the idea of a pineapple with humor and a backstory. So they waste the time when they're walking on stage and nobody's really engaged yet by telling this boring story, and then they got pineapple to be funny. That's called a callback joke in the business. But you do this already with your friends. When you go out with people, especially people you've known for a long time, you have loads of things called inside jokes. And just the mention of edamame will get you rolling with laughter. That is the power of words. You can condense huge ideas down into just a couple of words and then use those couple of words to completely change the situation around. Your parents have done this, your mentors have done this with you, and as you think back, your loved ones as well. Maybe the most oppressive person is yourself and all the things that you've told yourself that you need to change. When you go to a therapist, you work through these inside jokes and you get them your internal monologue right. Well, what if as leaders, we're really in charge of the external monologue in our companies? We need to design the rocks and the roles in our organizations that are common and that will define our culture. Questions like, how do I find energy? How do I treat others? How do I treat myself? How do we manage risk? How do we celebrate success? How do we deal with failure? Let me tell you a story about how this happened for my dad. A young man named Daryl was an intern in high school, and he forgot to mop the baseboards of the examination room in my dad's veterinary practice. Daryl, my dad said, you got to mop the baseboards because these people don't have any way of knowing if I'm a good veterinarian. But if they walk into a clean waiting room, then they'll know at least this guy takes the details seriously. Daryl, being a high schooler, of course, shrugged his shoulders and rolled his eyes, but he mopped the baseboards from then on out. A couple of years later, however, he came back to my dad's office and told this story. Dr. Sutton, I was at that local grease joint and I noticed that they hadn't cleaned their baseboards in a long time. And I said to myself, if these guys don't clean those baseboards, I bet they don't take care of the food very well. But I also wanted the sandwich, so I got my greasy burger and I left. And that night I had food poisoning. So for Daryl, the importance of baseboards, that small phrase, carried with it a lot more than just the need to clean the baseboards. So how do you implement this for you? Well, I used to do this at my work. I had three signs up behind me. There was the handles sign, which is what I used to call cultural scripts, the excuse board, and the illegal board. As you're setting culture, you have to describe what the ideal behavior is. You have to give people a mirror so they can see how they measure up to that ideal behavior. And then you have to tell them what's not allowed in your organization. Let's say that you have a culture where showing up late's okay. Like 5 minutes late to a meeting is fine. Great. But if that doesn't work for you, then you need to nip that in the bud really quick. That's going to have to go on your censorship board or your illegal board. Let's say, so for me, the excuse board was my mirror board. I told people, I don't pay you to find excuses. So when you find a new excuse, I need you to write it up there on the board so nobody else has to find it. Now, that worked for our culture because we had a Camelot mentality, which was if I had an excuse, I had it right on the board. I was subject to all these rules just as much as everyone else was. So it worked for us. I hope it'll work for you as well. And I hope that you've built the trust in your organization that will allow it to work. But then I had the handles board. Now, the handles board was full of a bunch of weird 12-syllable phrases, like vampires suck, that were designed to spark curiosity. If you want people to really engage it, you got to go back to the spa. That's Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle. And the way that they taught their students, the way that they influenced their communities, which was by asking questions and engaging in dialogue. And before you can ask questions and engage in dialogue, you have to spike curiosity. So, vampires suck is how I talk to my team about positive energy and showing up and doing your part of the job. And the pain that happens when others don't. Another one of my favorite quotes is courage versus recklessness. And I'll take people out for coffee and we'll discuss, and we'll I'll take people out for coffee and we'll discuss the differences between courageous behavior and reckless behavior. Now, in my mind, I have a couple of core rocks that are already in my head that I want to drive the conversation to, but I let them pull out personal stories from their life, and I'll share personal stories from my life, and we will swirl the conversation as we gradually sketch out the edges or the boundaries of that topic. It takes about an hour, and you could see it as wasted effort, but for the rest of the time that we interact with one another, all I have to do is say, I need you to be courageous, and recklessness is implied in that conversation, just like a good callback joke or an inside joke. So as we start wrapping up here, I want to talk to you about some practical ways you can do this in your organization. First of all, choose 40 scripts. Sit down and give each script a week. Just start with the title or something that frustrates you or something that's core to your organization. Just start with the title and journal a little bit about how you would like to discuss that topic and where you want to get to. Choose some 12-syllable names that are interesting and thought-provoking and will drive your employees to ask you questions. And then post them in a public place to drive the conversation. Then dedicate coffee once a week with one of your employees or followers, somebody that you're influencing, and have a spa discussion where you go through and ask questions and explore the idea and try to get those rocks fleshed out. Remember to deal with relationships, time management, forgiveness, mindset, execution, status, inclusion. How to deal with failures and successes. Remember to be covering the four big questions. There's the two strategic questions, where are we going and how are we going to get there? And then there are the two cultural questions. Do I fit here? Where do I fit? And how am I supposed to behave once I'm here? It's your job as a leader, if you want to 10x your influence, to understand it's your job to manage culture. And managing culture means shaping identity. And that's pretty bold, but it's a boldness that we're all aching for. And if you're not doing it, who is? You know, in ancient maritime trade, we had a word for people that set culture without the captain's approval, and that was mutiny. And that mutiny is what's driving 95% of the dissatisfaction in the workplace today. So label your bus. Don't just get people in the right seats. Make sure you have the right people on the bus and the wrong people off the bus. And forgive yourself. Let yourself realize that doesn't mean those people are bad. It means that they don't fit. But also label your bus clearly so you don't get the wrong people on the bus. Give them a chance to self-sort. And as you implement it in your organization, realize setting culture is an activity of identity. And identity is an activity of saying what we are going to be, what we aren't going to be, and then giving people enough mirrors, enough inside jokes where they can reflect upon themselves and see if they're living up to the standard that you had. I'm Drew Sutton with Drew Sutton Leadership, and I'm looking forward to seeing how your influence grows because of this.
Thank you for participating in today's enlightening session of Catalyze. As we transition to our next expert, remember that each strategy and insight is a step toward becoming a transformative leader in your field. Visit ConnectedLeadersAcademy.com to stay engaged and informed. The journey of change is ongoing. Let's move forward together.